It's the last day of term for us as Series 8 of I'm a Public Health Professional, Get Me Out of Here comes to an end. And to celebrate, we brought our games in. Who's for Kaplunk then? It's been a funny old year in public health, and over the next few minutes we'll be doing that time-honoured thing that all radio and TV stations do at this time of year, because they're too lazy to find anything new. We'll be reflecting on some of the major stories of 2015. The NHS has grabbed its usual share of headlines, and with the theme of the day has provided us with a game of public health Cluedo. Who is really responsible for the queues at A&E? Is it George with the axe in the Commons? Or is it Mr. Truss, the accountant, in the ivory tower with a balance sheet? Back in March, three quarters of local authorities agreed that bringing public health back into local government had delivered better outcomes for local populations. Fast forward a few months to July, and the wheels were already beginning to fall off, with the Chartered Institute of Environmental Health warning that cuts to public spending will have long-term consequences on health and well-being. Figures revealed workplace health and safety inspections were down 91% in 5 years, while the number of qualified officers was down 11%. Within a month, the Department of Health had issued their consultation on public health cuts, with a preferred option to cut budgets across the board by 6.2%, the equivalent of £200 million a year. Despite that jolt in the wallet in October, local authorities got further responsibility with commissioning services for the under-fives transferred from the NHS. As the axe was lifted, momentum started to build before the Chancellor's autumn statement, with experts from all corners pointing out that cutting those services that attempt to keep people from the NHS's door will have a lasting effect on its ability to deliver. To make matters more complicated, many of the services threatened by cuts were those required by law, including tackling alcohol and drug misuse, smoking and obesity, as well as generally promoting a healthier lifestyle. This man, though, was not for turning, and in November the expected axe fell during the autumn statement, the real damage being disguised by the announcement of a mild increase in funds for the NHS. Not only was the original £200 million cut carried through, the Chancellor also weighed in with a further 4%. Most people who admit that from humble beginnings trying to understand the NHS these days would even give it Albert Einstein and Stephen Hawking a good run for their money. But to bring it back to simple principles that Mr. Osborne understands only too well when referring to the economy, long-term investment in health will provide major benefits in the future. That investment, though, needs to be as much in preventing ill health as it does in treating it. Whilst our nurses and doctors do a brilliant job, so do those public health professionals who work largely under the radar in increasingly desperate times. Surely the two deserve to be able to work together to make things better for all of us. A bit of Christmas magic. I have here two chickens, and all you have to do is tell me which one is carrying Campylobacter. Oh, come on. Of course it's the one. Is it this one? Or that one? Or, well, I'm not the only one who can't tell, as the UK's major supermarkets have spent the best part of the year trying to find out quite how contaminated the birds they are selling us really are. With figures that show that 250,000 of us go down with Campylobacter every year, the Food Standards Agency even launched the Chicken Challenge, aimed at cutting the number of cases in half. Over 2 million chickens are consumed by Britons every week, and results from the annual FSA survey show that 76% of them are still contaminated, although there has been a 7% drop in those that are most heavily contaminated from this time last year. As well as worrying about poultry, the FSA has been staying in the avian world by looking at our Twittering. Well, our tweets, to be more precise, as they found that looking at what people say on Twitter can help them spot outbreaks of foodborne illness quicker than traditional methods. That one, though, did make us wonder if their software had to be tailored to regional differences, or whether it would be sophisticated to pick up what my old grandad would have said, "Feeling a bit Tom and Dick boy from last night's Ruby. I'm off to see the quack." Well, we'll wait and see about that in 2016. Of our air quality has been another major talking point this year, with the government hauled over the coals by the European Court and civil servants at DEFRA trying to piece together a new action plan before the fireworks on the Thames on New Year's Eve add a few more particulates to the atmosphere. Across the globe, things are a little better in Beijing. They issued their first ever red warning recently as conditions deteriorated such that one US newspaper equated breathing in an hour's worth of polluted air in the city to smoking 40 cigarettes. A study by the European Environment Agency said that air pollution is responsible for an estimated 430,000 premature deaths in Europe every year, while the World Health Organization claims that we could save $53 billion in the UK alone if we reduce levels below current guidelines. Now, not wishing to sound like a cross between Ebenezer Scrooge and the Ghost of Christmas Past, but who are responsible for monitoring much of Britain's air quality? Ah yes, local authorities, who of course are now facing a 30% budget cut. Finally, we couldn't leave without a good old-fashioned pantomime, or the COP21 conference in Paris, as it's officially known, with a plotline that would make 2001 A Space Odyssey look like Thomas the Tank Engine. Does anyone really know what's going on? One set of scientists tell us that 2014 was the warmest year on record. Until this year, of course. While out from the wings, stage left, come another set of scientists shouting, "Oh no, it wasn't," and "Oh no, it isn't." While everyone walks around saying it's so mild out there, apart from the poor people of Cumbria, of course, who are still bailing out the basement. Meanwhile, according to Mr. Cameron, please feel free to boo or cheer at this point, depending on how you look at it, we have the greenest government ever. But look out behind you, as all those green subsidies disappear in a flash, and a drilling crew looking for fracking opportunities appears on the doorstep. Back in Paris, the rich countries that produce much of the CO2 we're all worried about seem intent on shifting their problem to the third world, who are already suffering the major effects. Another room full of negotiators works through the night, hopefully under a stream of low-energy light bulbs, to come up with a solution which might just limit climate change to 2 degrees in future, if we're lucky, leaving the public totally disenchanted with the whole idea, but celebrating the fact the price of petrol's gone down to close to £1. Way! No Prince Charming, no beautiful princess, and as far as we can see, definitely no happy ending in sight. That's it from us in 2015. Have a great Christmas, and we'll see you for more at the same time in the new year. Now, what's next? How about Hungry Hippos? The house was a tumbling and shaking. Papa said, "Watch that noise." Santa said, "It's only my reindeer rocking with the toys." Hey Santa, oh Santa, we're doing up a playbill rock. Hey, I'm a public health professional. Get me out of here is written, produced, and presented by Pete Hill. All comments made are purely personal and do not relate to any other body. This podcast is protected by a Creative Commons license. Any unauthorised reproduction for commercial gain is strictly prohibited. Everybody rolling to the Fairville Rock. Everybody bombing to the Fairville Rock. Everybody strolling to the Fairville Rock. Hey, Santa, oh Santa, well, doing up the Fairville Rock. Hip, 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 doing up the Fairville Rock.